Thank you for tuning in for another episode of Imperial Beverage Presents Another Round. I'm joined here with Maggie to talk a little bit about. Maggie recently hung out with some winemakers from Sabate, and we're going to go ahead and discuss what she learned, as long as it's still fresh, and some information regarding the differences between cava, champagne, and prosecco. Thank you so much for joining us today, Maggie.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so yeah, you had this opportunity to hang out with some really cool winemakers, some people that were really well informed in the industry, and you had some takeaways that you wanted to share.
Yeah, it was a cool week. Last week, we had two winemakers who are part of the Regal Imports portfolio come out, and it was their first time in Michigan, so we got to show them around Grand Rapids, Ann Arbor, Detroit. One of them was Ricardo with Valderiz, and then the other one was Marcel Sabate with Sabate Coca, which is a Corpinat.
That's awesome. Were they in town for an event, or...?
They were doing some market work with us. They did have a dinner in Grand Rapids, and then besides that, you know, we kind of took them around, just showed them the different cities, Lakeshore, some Michigan wine, and... let them give their presentations to a few of our accounts, and also educate, you know, me and a few of our sales reps as well, so that we can kind of take that knowledge and continue to spread it.
That's awesome.
Like this.
And so you mentioned something about Corpinat, then cava.
Yeah. So Corpinat is kind of a subgroup of cava. Cava has existed in our industry as kind of a almost like lower tier sparkling. It's often available for that kind of like $8 to $11 range, and a lot of cava is made by kind of big conglomerates. So there are different labels within one giant company buying up vineyards, you know, like bits and pieces, odds and ends of grapes to make these cavas that are available to the market for cheap. Corpinat came about because there was a group of winemakers who said, you know, hey, this is something that's actually really special to this like Pendis region of Spain. It's something that is specific to us. It's our version of champagne or prosecco, and we want to elevate it. And so from that, I believe it started with 9 producers, and there's maybe 11 or 12. It's definitely still growing. But there's producers that have specific rules that make it Corpinat instead of cava. And so those rules are just more strict vineyard management, longer time on lees, and everything has to be hand harvested. 90% of the grapes have to be indigenous to Spain. Parellada, Zorello, Macabeo, those are the big three. But you can also have, you know, Garnacha or Mataro, Malvasia. Those are your kind of like classic six, but any Spanish variety will count towards that 90%. What they're really trying to get away from is you making a cava with Pinot and Chard, because that isn't the heart of Spain. And they want to really showcase this is Spain's sparkling. Everything is 100% organic. It's all hand-harvested because they want to make sure that fruit that is coming in for the winemaking is, you know, as whole, hasn't been beat up in the vineyard, isn't coming in with any risk of infection. So they just take a lot of care in the vineyard because that reflects so much in the wine.
That's great.
It's cool. It's really cool. And it's this, I mean, it was a grassroots movement of winemakers who were like, no, wait, we need to elevate ourselves. And I think that that's really cool, because you've definitely seen that happen throughout history in different regions. And I think that there's definitely something that, especially for Michiganders, is very apparent, because I think that we have that in our industry as well. And I think that that was something that Marcel Sabate also felt, because, you know, he's tasting these Michigan wines and he was just so surprised by our ability to elevate the region with these winemakers who want to do something other than, you know, a fruited wine, something that is really shows Michigan quality and separates it from some of the historical wines that have been available from Michigan if that makes sense. It's a little wordy, but...
So, cava versus Prosecco versus champagne.
Yeah. So, I think that something about cava is that it is made in the champagne style. So, there's a couple different ways to get a wine to sparkle, to have those bubbles and effervescence. Traditional method or method champenois is what they do in champagne. You make your wine, you press it, do your initial fermentation. It's a still wine. You add sugar and kind of that mother yeast back in to that mixture, and then you bottle it. So now you have still wine with sugar and yeast in a bottle, capped. That is going to be kept for a year and placed on its side at a 45 degree angle. And it's called riddled, but they're turned about like 90 degrees every couple of months. And what you're doing is hoping that as that yeast is fermenting, it's falling down to the top of the bottle towards that cap. And then you do a disgorging process. And so the disgorging process is when you freeze the neck of the bottle, quickly remove the cap, because when you freeze it, you're getting all that yeast to stick down there. And so then you quickly remove the cap. And then you add back some sugar. This is all called dosage now. You add back some sugar, which is going to help how much sugar is in the final product. It determines the sweetness of the final product. But also you're adding it back in for that final CO2 production in the bottle, that final carbonation. It can affect your final ABV as well, but the majority of the reason that you're adding that sugar back in is for final carbonation and final sweetness. At that point, after all that's added, you cork it, and then you have to age it in its bottle before it's released. For a non-vintage champagne, the minimum of that time is 15 months. For cava, it's 9. For Corpinat, it's 18.
That is wild.
It's wild. And, like, you gotta hit it perfect, otherwise you might not get the bubbles. And that style of making sparkling creates really, really intense, really fine bubbles. So it's 6 to 7 bars of pressure inside that bottle, which is insane. It's like a very pressurized bottle, which is why the glass is so thick, why the cork is so, you know, so much larger than the top of the bottle, why it makes that like big pop when you open it. It's because there's a ton of pressure in there. And so Prosecco is made kind of in that same style, but it's not done in the bottle. It's done in a pressurized tank. So instead of adding that sugar and mother yeast back into each individual bottle and letting it ferment in there, you do it into a tank. You let it pressurize in the tank, and then you bottle it under pressure. So it's a little bit, you know, it takes a lot of the like labor out of it. And then cava is actually made method champenois. In that traditional method.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
And I guess there's another way to make sparkling wine, which is to force carbonate it.
That's kind of how I thought modern sparkling wines were made.
There's definitely sparkling wines that are made that way. And, you know, definitely wines that you have had that are made that way. It's, you know, I'm not against it by any means. I like bubbles however they come, but there is having that yeast contact time, having that in the bottle, that process will make those yeast characteristics come out in the aroma. So those usually come across as nutty or toasty, kind of brioche. Those are those classic yeast aromatics that you get with champagne and cava. Prosecco, you're going to get less of that, because your yeast to juice ratio is much different.
Interesting. And I would imagine, I mean, that you really take that away from the wine if you're going to force carbonate it. Like, I mean,
oh, yeah, yeah. It's not there. It's, and those wines will come across much more fruit forward, which sometimes is exactly what you want. And so, you know, depending on the style of sparkling you're making.
Who's your audience? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And I want to talk about this, too, the why cava kind of came to be in general, and why it's done in method champenois instead of, you know, a Charmat or Prosecco style. And that is because when in the Champagne region, they got phylloxera. it wiped out their vineyard. It's a pest that burrows into vines, but it really devastates a vineyard, and you have almost 100% loss every time. There's no real way to get rid of it once you have it. This was something that really ruined the wine industry in the late 1800s. But when it devastated France, all these people were like, well, what are we going to drink? We always drink champagne. There's nothing here. And so Spain immediately was like, wait, you know, they didn't have phylloxera yet. They're like, we'll make you something. And so they used their indigenous grapes and did it in a champagne style and sold a ton of it to France. And so then eventually we got kind of smart about phylloxera. We started working with American rootstock, which the pest cannot burrow into. And so, you know, now we have champagne that can make champagne. But from that history is how we get kava.
That's really wild.
It's really cool. When you taste kava next to champagne, I mean, the grape varieties are totally different. And champagne is a much cooler region than Pendus as well. So from kava, you're going to get a lot more of those fruit-forward elements on the nose, and champagne is always going to have more of that, like, minerality, a little bit more funk perhaps. You're going to get more of those, like, toasty brioche notes oftentimes, and you're going to get more floral stone fruit from your cava. The hard part is that those will be similar pressured. They're both going to be in that 6 to 7 bars of pressure range and have those really tiny fine bubbles. Prosecco is much lower, 2 to 4 bars of pressure, because you're not putting it all in a bottle, you're putting it all in a tank, so it's got more room to for those bubbles to spread out, and they're much larger bubbles. So that's going to be your main difference when you're kind of tasting them side by side.
Okay, that's what I was thinking when you were talking about, like, more pressure in the bottle than than the tank, because the tank, it would, you, like you said, it would have more room to expand and more. Physically more places for bubbles to go.
Yeah.
So it would be less bubble.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a term for...
Less bubble. Less pressure.
Less pressure for, like, the level of carbonation in a...
Yeah. Yeah. PSI. You know, pounds per square inch of... When I'm talking about bars, that's just metric way of talking about pounds per square inch. Champagne would be up to 100 PSI, and Prosecco is going to be closer to 30 to 60.
Wow. Okay.
So think about, like, your think about your, like, your bicycle tire, right? That's like 45 to 90, depending on if it's a mountain bike or a road bike. And you got all of that pressure in a bottle of wine. Imagine, like...
Yeah. No, that's
pumping
insane.
Pumping up that tire and it's in a bottle of champagne.
I have a lot more respect for the bottle now. Like, the bottle holding all this pressure.
Absolutely.
I mean,
We should talk to some glassmakers.
We should talk to some glassmakers. Like, those guys... They're probably hardcore, like...
Yeah. And the cork, I mean, when you look at, like, a wine cork...
Like, a normal wine cork, it's, you know, maybe 1.5 to 2 inches long. It's the diameter of, like, a...
Yeah, it's a little bit larger than the bottle, right? You can pull it out, you can stick it back in the bottle. Champagne is, like, double the size.
Oh, yeah.
You pull that out, there's...
It flares out. There's no way you're going to get it back in.
So all of that pressure of the cork is also on just the neck of the bottle.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's got to hold up there, too.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not getting any cheap glass if you're putting sparkling wine in it.
Wow.
At least at the pressure of Prosecco, and definitely the pressure of cava and champagne.
So cava and champagne have similar pressures?
Yeah, I mean, I think they definitely do have similar pressures because they're made in the same style. Yeah, I think that we oftentimes really not like dog on cava, but as a society we don't look at it the way that we should, because there is a lot of, like, heart and love and care that go into it. And that's why Corpinot came to be, because they're like, this is, if cava is an answer to champagne, let Corpinot be the answer to champagne. Let it be the answer to grower champagne and, you know, the houses that are putting a lot of time and care into it. A Sabbaté y Coca is just Corpinot.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Just Corpinot. They do have some still wines that I'm hoping we bring in. But right now what we have in our portfolio is just Corpinot. We have a Brut and a Brut Rosat, so a Rosé. And then we have their Mosette, which is all from a specific vineyard that they have planted, the Mosette vineyard. And then we have their Josep, which is kind of their highest end. And the biggest difference between all of those is, you know, quality of fruit in the vineyard, definitely, but also having that age time. You know, how long did it stay in the bottle before release? And they're like 36 months for their base wines.
Really?
Mm-hmm. You know, some of their Magnums, I think their current vintage is 12 years old.
Wow.
So they really do hold on to it, and they're showing beautifully. I mean, Sabbati Coca was started by Marcelino and Marcel. And so it's a generational winery, and those vines have been planted for 40 to 70 years. So it's a rich history. I had a teacher once who told me, don't let anyone give you Prosecco. You're deserving of champagne and champagne only. And I was like, okay, but what about Cava? And he was like, oh, and Cava. Also Cava. You deserve Cava. Now I would say, well, what about Corfinat?
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, that's funny. I love that.
Yeah. And I don't mean to, like, dog on Prosecco by any means. I love Prosecco. But I think it's a totally different animal.
It just because it's sparkling doesn't mean it's the same.
Right. That's a lot of information. And oh. I don't mean to confuse anybody further. I just was excited about Corfinat, wanted to talk about it.
Gosh, no. No, we are beyond pleased to have this information shared and recorded so that we can share with everybody.
Yeah.
And anybody can have the chance to listen to it, and hopefully it helps it broaden and expand their knowledge.
Yeah. If anyone wants to talk to me about Corfinat, you know, I can talk someone's ear off forever, so feel free to call.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Maggie, for joining us and sharing all that really, really incredible information. We appreciate everything that you do, and we appreciate you coming on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Jacob.
And thank you for listening to Imperial Beverage Presents Another Round. Until next time, cheers.